This morning, our guest is UMD American Indian Studies Professor Ted Johnson. He recently led a seminar for the medical school on autopsy sensitivity. There were a couple of cases in the news recently where Native customs were almost violated because there was a lack of understanding of Native customs versus autopsy protocols and some situations there. And obviously, something needs to change. We'll talk about that a little bit this morning. Tad, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Can you just give a quick synopsis of the two folks who passed and what happened in the instances of their after their deaths with regard to the autopsies?
Yes, the first gentleman who passed was Mashkub Abed, who was 65 years old, had a history of heart disease. He was in an automobile accident, and he died over the weekend. I got a call at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning because I'm an attorney. The spiritual leader for the Mille Lacs Band called and asked me to stop the autopsy because he was a fervent believer in the Madewan spirituality, and they do not believe in autopsies. And so consequently, I found Rebecca St. George, who's the attorney for Fond du Lac, and she and I wrote up an order. And at 11 o'clock that night, we got Judge McCauley from Cloquet to Carlton County to sign the order. And the medical examiner would not release the body at that point in time, but the following morning after we met with Mark Rubin, the St. Louis County attorney, who called Tom Pertler, who's the Carlton County attorney, the medical examiner got talked into finally releasing Mr. Abed's body to his family. And under the beliefs of the Madewan, which not that many people know about, there's a 4-day journey that people go on, and the first day they're supposed to be washed in cedar, and that was not allowed. The family was not allowed access to the body, and a police had been called, which was very unusual, and the family had not really been talked to by the medical examiner. Suddenly I just got a phone call. The family was following police cars into UMD, and the body was kind of being held captive at UMD for awaiting an autopsy. And so it was very frustrating that evening to have a court order and not have the medical examiner follow it, and I had to go out and tell the widow, unfortunately, I have a court order, but you can't have his body back tonight, and we'll hopefully get it back tomorrow morning, which we did. The following few days later, Rebecca St. George from Fond du Lac called me up and said there's been another incident. A young lady who was 24 was actually in an unfortunate auto accident. She was a passenger. She was struck on the side, and the car was essentially T-boned. She died instantly from head injuries. She was also Madewan, and it was fairly obviously in both instances what the cause of death was.
The State Patrol did not ask for an autopsy.
In either one, they were not pushing for an autopsy, and the medical examiner was. So, Rebecca and I ended up writing another order and got the judge to sign it. So her body got released. But having done all of that, we realized that probably needs to be a change in a number of things, the way the counties approach these things and then the way the state approaches them.
Well, there is something rather different about the way the medical examiner is reimbursed in St. Louis County.
Well, it's an unusual contract in both Carlton and St. Louis County where there's actually an incentive to autopsy more people. They get a monthly stipend, but they also get a extra fee for each body they autopsy. So it's kind of unusual. And apparently our lobbying team in the Twin Cities met with medical examiners from other counties, and they had not heard of a situation where, the family was not talked to. There were police escorts, and the medical examiner was really not listening to the family. So that's something that needs to change. I think there needs to be a bit of cultural education for medical examiners and possibly county officials here in St. Louis County. And we did meet with them, and the sheriff and the county attorneys were very amenable to getting a cultural education on some things. But we think the bigger change that needs to be made is in the state law.
There obviously is not a huge Jewish population here in our community, but my understanding is that the Jewish faith requires a person to be buried within 24 hours of their death, which would mean that if something like this if something similar to this happened, there would be an issue again. Are you aware of any issues in St. Louis County where a Jewish family has said, you need to release the body to us right away?
I'm not. I'm guessing it's happened, but it probably happens more frequently in the Twin Cities where there's a larger population of Jewish people. But yes, it's a for Orthodox Jewish people that they have that belief, but they're not alone. There's also Seventh-day Adventists and the Hmong community and Christian Scientists. There's a number of faiths that do not believe in autopsies. But we started doing a little research, and we looked at New York state law first and then Rhode Island and Ohio, and we found about seven major states, California, where 56% of Americans live, basically, there's a law in place that allows for religious objections to autopsies. So we're not saying that if there's a compelling state interest, like a homicide or some other infectious disease, or there's some mystery surrounding the death, that an autopsy should not take place. But if in a case like Mr. Abed, where somebody is 65 years old, has heart disease, there's a fairly obvious cause of death, or in Ms. Martineau's case, there would be this, the family would have the ability to go in front of a judge, make a religious objection, and if the state can show a compelling governmental interest to do an autopsy could be done. But right now in Minnesota, we did it on a case-by-case basis, and what the judge balanced was the interests of the state against the religious freedom rights, because there is the First Amendment of the Constitution, of course, guarantees free exercise of religion. And then the Minnesota State Constitution is a very strong statement on the free exercise of religion. And there's a line of cases called the Hirschberger cases, which allow for, freedom of religion, free exercise of religion to be balanced against things. And in this instance, it was the state's need to do an autopsy. And Judge McCauley balanced those things and found that the free exercise of religion was more outweighed the state's interest in doing an autopsy. But we need to either get some case precedent in place. But what we're hoping for right now is our lobbyists in the Twin Cities are working with legislators to change the law so that it's similar to these other states. And it's not unreasonable. The exact same autopsy law would be in place. The only thing that would be changed is if there's somebody with a religious belief and they would be able to go in front of a judge, if the state has a compelling governmental interest to do an autopsy, they would be allowed to do so. If there is no compelling governmental interest and there's a religious objection, a judge could then rule that let the family have the body back and let them be buried pursuant to their faith. And this impacts not only the decedent, but also the family. They have a right to mourn in their traditional way. And that's what got harmed in this particular instance was the Abed and Martineau family for a period of hours. And the Abed family ended up spending the entire night here in the parking lot at UMD because under their traditions, they're supposed to be close to the body. So it was a 15-degree night with, wind chill. I'm guessing it was well below zero. UMD allowed them to build a fire. UMD invited them in for some wild rice and some fish. But we were trying to accommodate them as best we could. But it was a very frustrating evening for all of us because the medical examiner would not release the body, even with a court order.
How can a family make their religious beliefs known to the medical examiner or the police or whoever or the county or whoever the appropriate authorities are if nobody's talking to the family? And if the body is taken and whisked away, who do they talk to? How can they say anything to anybody if no one's going to listen to them?
That's what was so frustrating in this particular instance. It was very there was no communication between the family and the medical examiner. And
is that legislated? Should it be legislated?
We believe that should be legislated. We believe that there should be this contact between the medical examiner and so that there's an understanding and a discussion of what people believe. The medical examiners claim that they try to do that, but in this particular instance, rather than talking to the family, in the Abed case, they called in the police, like there were suddenly about four or five patrol cars at the hospital gathering up. And the family had been told that, you know, we may have to take a look at him with regard to, because the airbags went off. And actually, if you look at the state statute, there's nothing about airbags. And in fact, the state patrol said we don't need to look at this body. The medical examiners, instead of talking to the family, called the police and the family ended up following the police to UMD, where there were more police outside the doors of the medical school where they brought the body. And so the Mille Lacs Band lobbying team talked to medical examiners from other parts of the state, and they said, we've never done that. We've never called the police. We usually talk to the family.
So it seems obvious to you that this wasn't policy, that this had more to do with the family being Native than...
I don't want to go there, but it was two cases of Indian people with certain beliefs. And these beliefs are not understood by the non-Indian community. The Madewin was a religion that had to go underground. I think everybody is aware of Wounded Knee in 1890 when people were practicing their religion and the army misunderstood and broke out and shot everybody. Well, word of that spread throughout Indian country quite a bit. And so a lot of Native American religions went underground. They sent people to boarding schools, said, don't speak your language, don't practice your religion. And so on Indian reservations, which I worked on for almost 30 years, they don't talk about Madewin things. And so, suddenly, at a moment like this, the discussion has to be had, especially now that we're trying to change the state law. But they fall into the same category of other religions who do not want autopsies. And so, I think we'll have a coalition of religions, and we're actually, the Mille Lacs Band is talking to interfaith organizations who are completely behind this. And there's folks that are, have respect for religious cultures. And then I was talking to somebody at the gym this morning who actually was like, I just don't want the government messing with my body. And I was like, that's a whole new take on that. But, we have completely different political perspectives. But he was like, I'm completely with you on that.
The same conclusion,
a different direction
to get there.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. So we're hoping that we can get support for this legislation. We're hoping that folks can contact their legislators. The bill has not been introduced yet. We're looking at some language from other states. Rhode Island has some good language. The best of the gold standard is really New Mexico, but we don't think we'll get that there. They actually go talk to the family if it's Native American and ask them if they're okay with an autopsy, if they object, then they just don't do it. In Rhode Island, they have this compelling governmental interest test, and that's what we think is a reasonable balance at this particular juncture.
Dad, obviously it takes time to get laws to change. If something were to happen now, what could be different in between now and the time that you hope to get the law changed? If someone passes and there an autopsy is requested, is there a new protocol, even if it's unofficial, in place so that this doesn't happen again?
I think in the counties that are impacted around here, they could easily draft up some language with some protocols in it as to what to do with Native Americans. I'm guessing there'd be some willing Native American attorney types that might be willing to help them with that type of language in the short run. In the long run, I think we really have to change the law. And Governor Dayton signed an order in the summer of 2013 that required consultation between state employees that work with Indian people and Indian tribes. And they had to actually go out and do consultation with Indian tribes and take classes in how to understand American Indian history and culture. And that's not required for the counties right now, but we're hoping that that concept will trickle down to the counties, where in instances like this, it's to their benefit to understand the culture. And this, granted, is a very unusual religion. It's a very unusual moment in history, but I think this is a teachable moment where people can learn from it. And it's two tragedies in a row, but hopefully we can pull something good out of it. And the two good things I think we can do, change the law and get a little better culturally educated.
talking to each other, maybe a little communication.
Right.
Tad, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank
Tad
you.
Johnson is a UMD American Indian Studies professor, and he joined us as our guest this morning in the studio here on Northland Morning.